Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and today really pleased to welcome back Patty Nagai, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County. We kind of call her the houseplant guru. She knows all kinds of things about houseplants, and we're going to zero in on that a bit today. And certainly if you have questions for her as we move along today, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And don't forget my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question, a comment, or maybe you got a photo, picture of an insect, picture of a houseplant. You want to try and have Patty identify something relating to it? Please send it along. Or maybe you just got a pretty houseplant and you want to share the photo. I wouldn't mind that either. That's at the Larry Mueller Show. Patty Nagai with us. Patty, hi.
Welcome. Welcome to me. Welcome to you. Hello. Good morning. Happy Friday.
How are you doing today? Are you up and at 'em and ready to take questions about houseplants?
I am. In fact, just this week, I taught a class on houseplants for the Master Gardeners statewide distance education class, which was kind of fun. So I love talking houseplants, but I welcome any other kinds of questions as well. I answer what I can and certainly look for answers for anything else later on. I mean, there are many ways to get in touch with me and other horticulture educators around the state. You know, UW Extension, of course, we're all about education and answering people's questions and making sure people have really good information.
So absolutely.
There are many ways to do that.
What are some of the problems are you're hearing right now from people about their houseplants? Anything in particular kind of sticking out?
There are a couple of things that I have been getting a lot of questions on recently, and one is scale, mealybugs, those types of insects.
Yeah.
This is the time of year, you know, when we start getting towards the end of winter into spring when the plants are starting to grow a little bit more, and they've, you know, sometimes people take their plants outside and bring them back in, and then over the winter those little insect eggs and mite eggs hatch, and little things start creeping and crawling across
yeah.
the plants and reproducing, and then all of a sudden you notice them because they're in fairly high number. And so I've been getting a lot of questions on that on a number of different plants. So we can certainly talk about how to
deal with that.
Those things and how to deal with them because they're kind of messy.
Yeah. Well, I'm seeing we've got questions that may relate to that. As Jerry and Ashapin, let's go to you. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think that's exactly what I'm dealing with. I have some greens I'm growing in an outdoor greenhouse that's heated,
mm-hmm.
and I have small white bugs on the beet plants right now.
Mm.
Are they flying or are they staying put?
They're staying put.
Do they look kind of? Do they feel kind of sticky? Have you noticed any stickiness?
When I touch them, the ones I've touched, they kind of crumble almost.
Oh, they crumble. Well, they might be dried up little mealybugs. But mealybug is a scale-type insect that, you know, puts its little proboscis in the leaf and then it stays put. And as it excretes all the nice juicy plant sap from your plant, it starts to excrete this white sticky mass around the insect. And so it's typically pretty sticky. It also, while it's feeding, will excrete some honeydew. So you might see some stickiness around the plants, too, on the edges of the pot, if it's on a shelf or a table or on the floor, you might get some stickiness around the plant that way. If you're not seeing that, I don't know that it's mealybug. Now, the more traditional scale that people think of is brown, typically tan brown or sometimes a darker brownish-black color, and they're kind of crunchy because they make a very armored sort of covering over their little bodies to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not usually white.
No.
So, go ahead.
Bit of a mystery.
Yes, a little bit. But
do you have recommendations for treating them? Or?
Well, you know, one of the first things that I always recommend, you know, it's great if you can get it identified, and so if you can take a picture or bring a sample into your local extension office and see if you can get it identified for sure what it is, that's always a great first step. But one of the things that you can do right away, and this is true for all plants that are grown inside, whether we're talking about, you know, house plants per se, tropical plants or vegetables or herbs or anything, is to put it in the sink and give it a nice little bath with some lukewarm water. Not soap, just water, and see if you can dislodge those insects off of the plants and give them a good watering while you're at it. Let it drain completely before you put them out. And if you do that on a regular basis, you will really discourage the majority of insects. But before I could recommend any kind of pesticide treatment, we'd need to know exactly what insect that was. Even though there are some nice little organic products that you can use on interior plants and on edible crops as well, it's always a good idea to know what you're treating before you treat it.
Yeah. Well, Jerry, if you've got a digital camera, you might try for a close-up and put it up on our Facebook page.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and we'll see if you even do it today, Patty. Well, I don't know if you're near a computer or not, Patty.
I am. I have my computer up. I've got it on the Facebook.
Okay.
And I was just noticing that your information for me on Racine County is incorrect, so I corrected that.
Oh, good. You corrected it.
Our office moved in October, so we have all new information.
Oh, well, it's a good thing you were on there. So we now have correct information about your office. That's good.
Yes, it's on there.
All right. Well, I tell you what, we've got more callers online. Mona's in Appleton, and she has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Mona.
Hi. I actually have more of a helpful suggestion. I've had problems with scale insect and all kinds of stuff like that. And this neem oil, I got at a place on Wisconsin Avenue, I think it is. It's Eric's Indoor Garden, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he's got all kinds of natural stuff there, and he said the trick to that is you have to get it before the insects start invading your plants. And there's something he has, but I don't remember the name of it, for after, and I believe that's natural too, in case you get the bugs.
Right.
And you don't catch it with the neem oil, but this stuff works really great.
Right. Well, you know, neem oil is a great pesticide. It also works as a fungicide in some circumstances. You need to make sure that you're buying a formulation that's approved for interior plants, because a lot of them are only for exterior use. So you have to be careful about that. But neem oil is great.
On one particular, my weeping willow tree gets just, I've got a miniature one that gets just chewed all up if I don't spray it weekly with that.
Right, and there are a number of new products out that contain neem oil. It is an organic product. It's an extract from a tree, and it is toxic. I mean, just because it's organic,
still toxic.
I always have to be very careful about that, because people sometimes think if it's organic, it's safe, and no pesticide is really safe. You know, it's only as safe as the person who's applying it, and organic products can be quite toxic. So neem oil has to be applied carefully, but it is a really good product, and it works on a number of different insects. And there are some formulations that are good for certain prevention of certain fungal organisms as well. And there are a lot of products out there now for houseplants that are organic. You know, we've always had the insecticidal soaps, which are organic and can be used on most houseplants. Some things are sensitive to it, but they're messy to apply. And then there are a number of these different natural oils. There's a whole line of new natural oil products that contain things like cinnamon oil and rosemary oil and different types of mints and garlic and mixed with various insecticidal soaps and things. And they're incredibly organic,
right?
To the point that this particular line, they don't have EPA numbers. They are they're almost food grade oils.
Oh my goodness!
So they're still it's a really interesting classification, because they're still pesticides and they're still used as pesticides, but they're made with all of these food grade oils, which are really nice and work quite well on some of the scale insects. To talk a little bit more about treating scale with those oil-type products, because of the way the insects, the way their life cycle is, it's very important that you still wash your plants, but that you apply these products on a regular basis, because the scale, the hard scale as well as the mealybug scale, have those protective coverings, and so these products may work to some extent, but that what you're really targeting are those little crawlers, the little babies that come out.
Yep.
And those can come out like every 10 days or so, so you have to reapply.
Mm-hmm. Mona, thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, that was great. Great comment.
Tom and Stoddard, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question, but before I get into that, I want to mention that I have a gerbera that I had outside in a terracotta pot all summer, and then it was blooming, and I brought it inside, and it has never stopped blooming.
Oh, huh. Great.
It had a single blossom, and then it popped up two new ones when the old ones finally died back in November, and then now it's got, and there's been two colors in there. There's now I have two golden flowers and then one that's vermilion orange.
Wow.
It's got it under stress just right from the sound of it.
Yeah, and you know, Gerb, those are really fun to bring in the house. And what I learned this year, I have a new dog, and that was his favorite plant to eat. So he has chewed them down to nothing, and now they're starting to come back, though. But I missed out on all of those beautiful winter blooms, so that was very good of you to be able to get them to rebloom like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I have a question about my begonia. Mm-hmm. I've never had begonias before, but this thing always had spotty leaves through the summer, and I had it kind of under a table on my deck, but... we had, of course, so much rain all the time. Maybe that was part of it. But I brought it in this fall, and it was doing okay, but still had those leaves that had, large sections that were turning black.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I decided now I've never really repotted this, and I just stopped watering it, and it's all died back, and I want to replant it. And I'm wondering when I should repot it and
You could do it now. You know, when I bring begonias in, and is this like a dragon wing begonia, or is it a tuberous begonia? Do you know what kind of begonia it is?
It's a tuberous.
It's a tuberous one.
It's got dark leaves, and it had bright red flowers, but it's tuberous.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, what you might want to do is take it out of the pot that it's in. It's all dried out now.
Yeah.
Is that right? Take it out of the pot. Get a new clean pot and get some new clean potting mix, at one of the soilless mixes that's real high in organic matter. And I like the ones that already have the slow-release fertilizer mixed in. But if it doesn't, you can, of course, incorporate that on your own. I find it really helpful, especially for those flowering plants, to have a second source of fertilizer in the soil mix. But take it out of the pot and very gently... separate out those tubers and clean off the soil and check for any kind of rotten roots or any kind of decayed matter and try to gently remove that before you repot it. And then when you repot it, put it into a container that's not too terribly large. So you want a pot that's only about 1 to 2 inches at the most, bigger than the size of the root ball or the mass of the tubers. Okay, so that it's not, so that you don't have a huge amount of soil surrounding the base of the plant. And then plant it so that it's at about the same level that it was last year. And then I would suggest that you find a new location for it that perhaps gets maybe a little bit more sun, and that you're a little more careful, not that you weren't careful, but to be careful about not overwatering it. So begonias do like a rich organic soil. They do like moisture, but they don't want to be like sitting in water or in a place where they're too shady and too wet all the time. It sounds like you may have had some sort of root rot organism that was causing some leaf decay.
Yeah.
But, you know, unless you took it, I mean, sure, Brian Huddleston would love to take your plant and analyze it for you and tell you exactly which fungal organism it is. But it does sound like you might have had a root rot disease. But sometimes you can counteract that by repotting and putting everything into a nice, clean situation.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Tom. Appreciate your call. Patty Nagai, our guest today, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Patty Nagai, our guest today, as we zero in a bit on houseplants, although I'm sure she can take some other questions as well, wanted to mention that, once again, that in early July, I'll be heading a group of Wisconsin Public Radio listeners to London will be touring the English Gardens, attending the Hampton Court Flower Show. I know some of my students would love to be along with me on that one. We'll visit some of England's great churches and houses along with their gardens. We'll see the cathedrals at Leeds and Canterbury and visit the famous White Gardens at Sackville West and Bateman's House. That's the wooded retreat of Rudyard Kipling. Plus, we're going to spend an entire day exploring the grounds and exhibits of the Hampton Court Flower Show. It's the world's largest show, and it's run by the Royal Horticulture Society. We're also getting a private tour of the Secret Gardens of London, so that's kind of cool, too. Just a few of the highlights. I hope you'll take a look at it. The whole itinerary is online at wpr.org/travel, and we're partnering with Earthbound Expeditions for this trip. They do really great work. They've worked with public radio stations around the country. They worked with us on our festival Winter Waltz tour of Budapest, Vienna, and Prague. And I know our travelers really enjoyed it. So hope you'll consider joining us for this special gardening trip. Great way to meet other Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. Of course, I'll be there to, I guess, lend a hand. I'll help in any way I can. I'm looking forward to meeting everybody. Small group. We're not going to have a huge group. It's going to be a small group, so it'll be very personal. And you can go to wpr.org/travel. wpr.org/travel. And tell you what, July 1st. We take off July 1st for 9 days. Going to be fun. Hope you can do it. Patty, are you going to go with me?
I would love to. That sounds fabulous. I have toured a lot of those gardens, but it's been a very long time since I was there.
I'm sure
things have changed and grown. And
but they're lovely gardens, aren't they?
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. I know you'll have a fabulous time.
Well, Maya in Milwaukee has a question for you, and let's just go there and see what's on her mind. Hi, Maya.
Okay. Yeah. Hi. I have a succulent plant at my house, and it bloomed this winter, and the flowers are dead now, and I was wondering if I pulled the flowers off, would it bloom again?
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand what kind of plant it is.
It's a succulent plant. I don't really know what the...
Oh, a succulent?
Yeah.
Hmm. What were the flowers like?
They were smallish and pink.
Well, you know, a lot of those plants, I don't know exactly which plant it is, but a lot of them bloom during a certain time of year. So their flowers, for example, the zygote cactus, you know, the Christmas cactus, Thanksgiving cactus, and Easter cactus bloom at those distinct times of year because they respond somewhat to the day length and the temperature. And so with your succulent, that could be the case, too. And it may bloom only because of certain environmental conditions. But it wouldn't hurt to remove the dead blooms and to see, but it probably won't bloom again until the time that it bloomed this year. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had a Facebook question from Marge, and she says, have you heard the strange case of the illegal lemon tree? Bridget Donovan, also known as the Lemon Tree Lady, USDA's most wanted.
I did read about that some time ago. It was quite a bizarre story. And I don't remember the details about why. It was something to do with that particular lemon. But, you know, Wisconsin is not... there are lots of restrictions about moving citrus trees across state lines, but Wisconsin's not a real big citrus producer, so I wouldn't think that it would be a problem here.
Well, Marge was wondering if she'd like to try a dwarf Meyer lemon, and wondering if you had any suggestions on how to get that started. Obviously, that's an indoor.
Yes, it's an indoor plant. But, you know, the nice thing about the lemons, the oranges, and the dwarf grapefruit and all of those citrus trees is that they can withstand some pretty cool temperatures. And so I have two lemons and a lime tree. I usually put them outside sometime around the end of April or so. When we get to the point where the nighttime temperatures are pretty much staying above about 35 degrees.
Yeah.
I will put my lemons outside because they can tolerate those kind of temperatures, and they really appreciate the the sunshine and, and the temperature. So they, as long as the temperatures aren't falling like below freezing for any extended period of time, they're actually okay. So that, of course, will vary in different parts of the state. I live in southeastern Wisconsin, and so for me, that's usually around mid to late April when I can put them outside. But I watch the nighttime temperatures really carefully. But as far as getting started with one, what I recommend is that you purchase from a local nursery. It's I find it's better to buy something from a local greenhouse where you actually can see what you're getting.
Right.
A lot of times when you buy lemon or lime trees out of a catalog or something, they're not quite as big as what you think they're going to be, and then you might get disappointed because it'll take you a long time to get lemons. At our local nurseries and greenhouses around this Milwaukee, greater Milwaukee area, I always see a number of different really nice cultivars, all different sizes. Most of them are already in fruit production, and it just makes it a lot easier if you buy one that's already in production. You don't want to grow them from seed, because if you try to grow a citrus, just like with most fruits, from seed, you really don't know what you're getting.
Yeah.
Because you don't know where the pollen came from, and the wild seed types typically have humongous thorns on them.
Yeah, and they don't, and the fruit doesn't taste
right. Yeah, and the fruit, and you don't know, and it will take a long, long time to get fruit. So I always recommend that you just purchase the type that you want and visually be able to see it so that you know that it's the size and shape that you want for your location. Because some of them can get very big, even though it says dwarf. You know, you have to kind of know what you're getting into. For example, I have a Bears lime, which is B-E-A-R-S-S, and it is a producing lime, but it's only about 18 inches tall.
Ah.
So it's a great house plant. And
wow.
It can make, at any one time, it could have 6 to 12 limes on it. Right now it only has 4.
Well, now, what are the limes? Are they like a marble, or are they?
No, they're regular-sized
regular?
Limes.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're very, very juicy. I mean, incredibly
juicy. I love
juicy.
Limes.
They're much better than anything I get in the grocery store. But, you know, I only get a half dozen or so. But the lemon trees, I like Meyer lemons. They're fine. But the Meyer lemon has a different taste to it. What I have are called Eureka lemons. And the Eureka is more of a true lemon. And it's a huge lemon. It's very, very juicy. And it is really tart, lemony lemon. Whereas the Meyer lemon tends to be a little bit of a sweeter lemon. And it's a smaller lemon. And there's nothing wrong with that. And the Meyer lemon is a great little tree. Especially for the interior, but I just would like her to know that there are other alternatives out there, and that, you know, she might want to read up on some of the different cultivars and see which ones she really wants based on taste. My lemon trees are very productive. You know, I can have at any one time anywhere from a dozen. Last year was my best year. I had 52 lemons.
Wow. Whoa, I would love that.
So it's just amazing. And they're not that big. The trees now are, I've had them for 8 years, but the trees are about 5 feet tall, 5.5 feet
tall. Not so bad.
And they're just very productive. They bloom all through the winter, and the blossoms are so fragrant. It's a fun plant to have in your house, but you have to have bright light. So you need to make sure that you've got a good space for it with some really bright light, because you do need to keep it in a good site over the winter. It can stand cool temperatures over the winter. It's fine with that. So if you had, for example, a Four Seasons room, that would be the perfect place for citrus and lemons to go, because they can handle the cooler nights. But they really appreciate the really large windows, the very bright light.
Do you have any idea how many Eureka lemons you've sold today? How many people are going to run out?
I don't know. I should go into business.
I mean, that's how it's. And the lime, you know.
Bears lime is a wonderful thing.
How's that spelled again?
B-E-A-R-S-S.
Bears limes. Okay.
Yeah, and I don't usually say brand names, but the only place I've seen it is through Monrovia. But, of course, a lot of different garden centers and nurseries carry Monrovia pots. So they should be able to find it. And some of it you can order online too. You know, we have a number of local plant companies that you can order online and get good-sized plants.
I'm telling you, I spent a year and have been made several subsequent trips to the Caribbean. I spent a year at Trinidad and mm-hmm. Tobago, and Don, when I first was there, I was looking for lemons, and nobody was using lemons. They all used these fresh limes.
Right.
And they were, oh my goodness, they were just, tasted nothing at all like the limes you buy in the grocery store.
Right. Well, the limes that we buy in the grocery store are not, you know, they're just not fully ripe when they're harvested. And so they're shipped for long distances, and they sit in the grocery store for a long time. And so their flavor is not quite as good.
Yeah.
And I don't know what cultivar they are either. I don't know how much that, I'm sure that affects their taste as well, but the limes that I've been getting off of my Bear's Lime are amazing. The flavor is phenomenal, and the amount of juice that I get out of one lime, you know, I harvested a bunch of them and then froze the juice in ice cube trays.
Oh!
So then I had little cubes of fresh lime juice in my freezer.
Well, you are a smarty pants, aren't you? My wife's probably not listening, but know it or not, there's a Bear's Lime tree
in
our future, because I'm going to go get one.
And you know, the other thing that a lot of times people don't realize this, but when you go, if you have a favorite local nursery or garden center that you deal with, and they don't have what you're looking for, just ask them to order it for you, and they will order it for you.
Yeah.
And I've done that with one of our local nurseries here, and I've gotten all sorts of interesting little plants that they wouldn't normally carry, but they're happy to order them for me because one thing, they want to see how they do. Well, how are they doing in your garden? And maybe I'll order more of them next year.
Well, that's also a very good idea, and there's a local nursery here that I'm going to be calling and say, hey, order me one of those.
Yeah, and you might want to pick up a Eureka lemon while you're at it.
Well, that's the other thing. Well, maybe both.
Yeah, but the Myers lemon is a really nice little tree. It's a pretty well-behaved citrus tree. So, you know, and I mean that very seriously, because citrus, depending on the cultivar, some of them are a little bit wild-growing, and they're more difficult to prune than some of your other interior trees. They don't respond quite the same to pruning as some of the other trees do, so it takes a little practice.
Well, John, we're talking citrus here. John in Dunn County, I think, has a comment or question relating to citrus, so let's go to him. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you today? Wonderful show, and I was prompted to call because we have both lemon and lime trees in the house.
Oh, excellent.
Have for some time. Our fruit production is rather spotty and very too small, painfully small. We had one lime last year.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of blossom drop. We've had literally hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of blossoms this winter since Christmas, and a very small fruit set. I was wondering if you have some advice for me.
Well, I do have some advice for you, and the first thing, I'm going to ask you a question. How much do you know about plant botany? Do you know your flower structures really well?
I could muster through that, yeah.
Well, let me describe something to you, and then you can tell me what you're seeing, because citrus is a really funky little plant, and it makes two different kinds of blossoms. And so one of the blossoms that it makes is what we call a perfect flower, or complete flower. It has all of the plant parts that are, you know, it has the little sepals, the petals, and it also has both male and female reproductive structures. But it also makes a male flower that doesn't have the female structure.
All right.
So if you're getting only male flowers, and those are the ones that are dropping, then the reason you're not getting any fruit is you don't have any females, because you can't get fruit unless you got a female. And so the female flowers, right in the center of the flower, have a little sticky round structure on a pretty sturdy stalk, and it's right in the middle of the flower, and it's pale green, and it's smaller. It's about half the size of a pencil eraser, and it's sticky. And then surrounding it will be these very tiny little filaments with tiny little yellow anthers on the top of them, and those are all the males. So you'll have all of these little, tiny little, delicate-looking males around this big central structure. If you have all of those parts, then you have a flower that can produce a fruit. But if you're missing that central part, if you're missing that central part and you only have the little delicate filaments around the edge with the little yellow anthers on the end of them, you only have males. Okay, so you have to have both.
Yes.
And so if you, when you discover, you have to look at your flowers every morning. This is where you have to become quite geeky about your plants, and you have to look at your flowers every morning and find the ones that have that nice central piece. And then you can pull off other flowers that are just male only, and it needs to be fresh flowers, newly opened. And you can go and pollinate your own flowers. And I always joke and tell people it helps if you make little buzzing noises while you're doing it.
Lovely. So
so take the little anther, so it's the little yellow part. You need to get the little yellow part onto the little sticky part.
Yes.
And just do multiple flowers, and you will be rewarded with fruit. Now, that's when. Now, do you ever put your plants outside?
Oh, all summer.
Okay, so when you have your plants outside, this usually isn't an issue because you will have insects that visit your plant and pollinate your fruit, pollinate your flowers for you.
Yes.
And then, so that's when I've gotten my best fruit production, is when I've had some really nice flowering outside while I've had a lot of bees, because as geeky as I am about plants, you know, honestly, I don't have time every morning when my plants are blooming to go pollinate and make the little buzzing bee noises. So.
Right. Does soil fertility or different minerals cause more female flowers, or is this...
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that, but I will tell you something that will affect flower drop, and that is moisture content. So if your plants dry out during the time that they're flowering, and the plant perceives any kind of drought stress, it will drop flowers, male and female, even the perfect flowers. It'll drop all of them if it doesn't think that there's enough moisture. And nutritional stress can cause that also. So for citrus, you know, what I typically recommend for citrus is that it gets fertilized year-round, and that you need to make sure you're using a complete fertilizer that contains things like magnesium and calcium and some of those other elements that are really necessary for good fruit production. So you need to select your fertilizer appropriately for a flowering and fruiting plant to make sure that it's complete. And if you fertilize on a regular basis and make sure the soil stays nice and moist, I think it'll turn around and you'll get better fruit production. And, of course, if you pollinate, then...
There you go.
Pretend you're a bee. That'll help, too.
Thanks, John. Excuse me. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, you know, Barbara, on our Facebook page, wanted to tell us that she actually had a snake plant bloom. Mm.
Yes, she, I've seen that before. I'm looking at her. I wish you had put the picture up there, because it's
said
very cool.
She
looking.
Claims she can't find the photo. I'm not so sure. but she does say the blooms look like sparklers that shot out.
Yeah. You know, all of those tropical plants that we typically think of as just foliage plants, they all flower. Eventually, they will all flower. It just depends on what kind of conditions they're in and how old they are. Some of them just take longer before they flower, but I have seen a snake plant bloom, and it's kind of a surprise, and it looks like somebody stuck something in your plant, you know, like it doesn't really belong there.
and Judith had, they had a one bloom as well. She said the blooms were very sticky.
Yes, you know, and it's interesting, and this, of course, goes back to the whole botany physiology talk about flowers, but, you know, flowers exist for a reason.
Yeah.
And that reason is to make seed. You know, that's the plant trying to reproduce itself. And so when they're sticky like that, that's for its pollinator. So I'm not sure what kind of little critter pollinates a stink plant, but whatever it is, I'm sure it's attracted to that little sticky stuff. So you'd just be glad it's not pollinated by a fly.
Yeah.
Because then sure. When it bloomed, it would not smell very good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we had another Facebook comment for our question from Kathy, who loves this show, by the way. She loves Garden Talk. She's been, I've been overwintering two mandevilla vines in my garage this winter. They're beginning to show some green shoots. Should I bring these into the house as they're breaking dormancy? I have a very sunny 8-foot sliding glass door that faces east. Mm-hmm. It's the sunniest place in the house. And then she wonders about fertilizing or care.
Yeah, and you know, if they're starting to break and they're putting out new growths, then, you know, if you've got, you know, these are what I, a lot of times people say with all house plants that you should stop fertilizing them completely during the fall and winter months. And my problem with that is that there are a lot of house plants that continue to grow and flower during the fall and winter months. So you have to know a little bit about your plants. And if your plant is starting to grow, if it's producing flower buds, then you need to be fertilizing it on a regular basis to help with those types of developmental changes and growth. The mandevilla, you know, I brought a mandevilla in this year because it was so gorgeous, and it was the new little leaf mandevilla, and it's on a trellis that's 6 feet tall, and it was full of red blooms, and actually did really well.
Wow.
So I would say, yes, bring it in. You can't put it outside yet. It's too cold. But I would say go ahead and bring it in and start fertilizing it. You want to prune back any dead vines and make sure that you're allowing that something for that new growth to grow up on. So you need a trellis of some sort. But I think the mandevilla is probably more towards mid-May before we can put those back outside.
Janet in Oak Creek has a question for you. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I have a brown fig tree.
Mm-hmm.
This is the second year that I brought it in. The first year I brought it in, and it had little teeny brown ants. And this year, about a month ago, medium-sized dark ants started coming about.
Out of the pot.
Yeah. And so I know they don't like to be repotted. Right now it has leafed out, and I have fruit on it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering what's the best way, something organic. I love to eat the figs. And just to prevent, how do I, something about the plant ants are attracted to, and how do I not bring them in next year?
That's a great question, and, you know, when people move plants in and out, and I struggled with this, too, because, you know, most of my houseplants stay put. There are a lot of houseplants that really don't like to be moved, and so they are interior plants, and I keep them on the interior. But some things, like figs and citrus and hibiscus, truly want to be outside during the summer, and they'll really do much better if they're moved outside. And then you always have that issue of bringing things inside. So when you go to bring a pot back in the house, it's, of course, very important to wash the pot off on the outside, to water things really thoroughly and let it drain, to clean the pot. You can use things like insecticidal soap as a spray on the plant to try and deter any insects from coming inside. You know, all of this, of course, is done before you bring the plant back inside. There are some things that you can use on edible fruit crops like that, you know, would not hurt the fruit. For ants, though, ants are really interesting. You know, they must be, you know, if they were in the pot for that long, I'm thinking you must have a little queen in there somewhere. And so normally what we, you know, for ant control, like out in the yard, you know, you have to get pesticides right down to the queen and kill the queen. But I don't know of anything you can drench that's organic that would take care of the insects. This would be a great question for Phil Pelletieri.
And I think he's on next week.
Yeah, you might want to ask him about this because normally when I'm talking about houseplants and bringing things in, the insects that people typically have problems with are things that are on the plant itself. You know, like the white fly, aphid, mealybug, scale. And you can do the insecticidal soap and wash the plants really well. And there are a number of ways, and do some plant-based oils
that are organic also to take care of those plant-based insects. But when you're talking about stuff in the soil, you know, that's a little trickier. One thing I do recommend that when you put your pots outside, now I don't know that this is going to deter ants, but it would deter, it deters, it seems to deter things like earwig and pill bug and, you know, those types of insects, is to make sure that your plants are, your pots are propped up on some kind of pot seat so they're not resting directly on a flat surface, a deck, a patio, or even the ground, so that they're up off of the ground. That seems to help with those little insects that go up into the drainage hole. But ant, you know, ants, that's interesting. Yeah. I can see why they would like the fig. You know, the fig itself is has got a nice little sticky sap, and they might be feeding on that. But the other thing to check for is to make sure that there's not another insect on the plant, because ants also feed on the excrement of scale and mealybug and aphid.
Yep, that's
so
true.
So you want to make sure that you don't have those. And then other than that, you know, bait, the little baits for ants might be the way to go. But I'm going to defer that one over to Phil, because
we'll see what he's got to say.
See what he can, you know, because you've got a number of different things here. So you've got ants in the soil of an edible crop in a pot that's going to be outside and inside. It's about as complicated as you can get.
And Phil's on next Wednesday. So
oh, good. Okay.
So this coming Wednesday, we'll have him on. Patty Nagai, our guest today, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Patty Nagai, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County. Join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. I'd love to hear from you. And John in Mequon has a question here. Actually, Mike in Green, we'll go to Mike in Green Bay. John, then you'll be next. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I recently purchased some tree seeds. They're called an Ammer choke cherry. Mm-hmm. And the reason I went with the seeds is I wasn't sure I could find anything in any of the nurseries around here. And I thought for the price it would just be inexpensive enough just to give it a shot. Well, I've got the seeds sprouting.
Oh, good.
And I've got I planted about 18 seeds, and so far about 6 have sprouted. Now, I figure that it's going to take about 3.5 years before I can actually plant them outside. My concern is that I don't do anything to them to damage them or impair their continued growth between now and that period. Is there anything special I need to know or do?
Well, you know, the choke cherries are exterior plants typically, and so
Correct. They
go dormant in the fall and in the winter. And so what you might want to do is find a protected place somewhere out in your garden where you can sink those pots, so you can keep them in the pots, because that's
okay.
You know, that's a great way for new seedlings to develop a really healthy root system, because they're going to be in a nice soil mixture or soilless mixture that you've germinated them in, and they'll grow roots in a more controlled environment as opposed to just sticking them out in your garden. So you can keep them in those containers, but when it gets to the fall, you need to find a place where you can sink the pots right down into the ground, and then when the ground freezes, you need to come back and do a nice winter mulch on top of them. And then when spring comes, you can take them back out, you can repot them, or you might decide at that point that they're big enough to put out in your yard wherever you want them. But it generally takes, you know, 2 to 3 years for a tree seedling to get to a size that is what I would consider like safe to move out into the yard.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
because
that's what
they're
I was
so
thinking.
Small and you step on them or the
rabbit eats them.
Comes by, or the rabbit eats them, yeah. And so, yeah, it's fine to keep them in those pots. But The other thing is, you know, with each year that you keep them in the container, you may have to size up the container because you don't want to hinder the root system from developing either. You want the root system to get as big as possible. And so, of course, every time you go to a bigger pot, it becomes more difficult to sink those pots back in the ground.
Yeah.
Because you have to dig a bigger hole.
Yep. There you go. Right. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. Thank you.
And now on to John in Mequon. John, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Well, hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is on bougainvilleas. I have several that I bring inside for the winter,
mm-hmm.
and they go through the same cycle every year. I'm looking at maybe is there something I can do differently. What they do is they drop their leaves,
sure.
And then they come back again. The leaves start, the new ones start sprouting,
right.
and then through the wintertime, those new leaves on certain branches of this bougainvillea, and I try to prune them so they look like miniature trees.
Mm-hmm.
And they themselves will dry out and drop off. New ones will come back.
Right.
In the spring or in May, I bring it outside, and it you know does its wonderful summer thing again.
Right.
Can
right.
I do something different during the winter to prevent this?
Yeah, well, there are a couple of things you could do. I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh at you, but it's just, it's you know, it's the typical inside-outside plant thing because the same thing happens with hibiscus. And it's a plant that produces two different kinds of leaves. So plants are amazingly adaptable, and they acclimate using a number of different strategies. And some of those strategies are physiologic. You know, they'll change... you know, they'll change something chemically within their system, but some of them are structural. And so this may be one of those plants that makes sun leaves and shade leaves. And so sun leaves tend to be darker green and thicker. They have a heavier cuticle, a heavier wax coating for protection against moisture loss and protection against the sun. They're darker green because they can absorb more sunlight because there is more sunlight. And they tend to be a little bit smaller and thicker because they don't need to be so big to absorb as much sunlight, whereas shade leaves on houseplants and tropical plants tend to be slightly bigger, thinner, paler, a little bit yellow sometimes. They just don't have quite the chlorophyll production, and they don't have as much of that protective cuticle, that protective waxy layer. And so what happens in the winter in most Wisconsin homes is that it gets a little dry. And so we have, you know, our moisture, our humidity inside the house, even if you've got a humidifier in the central heating system, your humidity is probably less than 40%. And if you don't have a humidifier, it's probably closer to 20%. And so that is horrible for tropical plants, especially plants that are working on these shade leaves with very little wax protection on them. And so they're just drying out because they can't tolerate the low humidity. So what can you do differently? Two things. One, try to find a brighter location for them. And if you don't have a better, brighter window, consider putting in some incandescent lamps or some fluorescent lamps or something to give them a little bit more light. And then the second thing you need to do is to try and find a way to increase the humidity. And one of the best ways to increase the humidity is to get more plants. So when you group all your plants together, they make this little microclimate that's much better for all of them. And so you can do that. The other possibility, if it's not, you know, that's usually what it is light and humidity. But you should also check and make sure you don't have spider mites, because spider mites can also cause the leaves to dry up and fall off. And that can be easily cured by giving your plants a nice tepid water bath every week, which is another one of those geeky things to do, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are you doing today? I'm giving my plants a bath. But but it definitely can help get rid of the spider mites on your plants.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And well, let's see, we have maybe a quick question here from a Facebook question. From Jill, I propagate philodendrons with my fourth graders every year from clippings off my own plant. I'm wondering if you could recommend another plant that would do as well. We use them in these in 2-liter soda bottle terrariums.
Oh, there's a lot of different plants that she could use. There's actually a dwarf creeping ficus that works really well in terrariums, and it has a tiny little leaf about the size of your thumbnail, but it's a ficus.
but it's a ground cover ficus, and so it's a fig, and it's really pretty. You can use a plant called baby's tears in terrariums, and that's a nice little plant that also is easy to propagate. The little miniature palm trees, the little dwarf parlor palms, can be divided into little single stalks, and those work well in terrariums. And pothos is another one. You may think it's philodendron. Their philodendron has a darker green leaf, more heart-shaped, and a little delicate stem, whereas pothos has a slightly larger leaf, and it's more of a yellow color and has some white on it. So there are lots of options for doing those easy propagation.
You know, and there's another that I wanted to mention, which is the Wisconsin fast plant.
Oh, yeah, the brassicas.
The brassicas, which yeah. Paul Williams, who developed, and they're used, as you know, in classrooms all over all over the world.
Right, and they're very flexible. They can grow under a lot of different types of situations. And so she's talking about propagating from cuttings, you know, what kind of plants can you propagate from cuttings. But there are probably a lot of different things that you could use that you could grow easily from seed and put in terrariums. You know what would really be fun is to do an edible terrarium, and you could put things like carrot and radish and lettuce in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and these fast plants,
that would be kind of fun. And then you
they
throw
grow
the fast
very fast.
Right, because that's an edible plant also, all of the brassicas are edible, so that would be cool.
Yeah, it would
that
be
would be fun to do, yeah.
And so, and for that one, just go online and just type in Wisconsin Fast Plants, and you're going to get a whole bunch of information. Patty Nagai, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Patty Nagai, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County, zeroing in a bit on houseplants with her today, but I'm sure she'll take other questions as well. Pleased to have you listening in. Certainly call us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Post a question there. I had a Facebook question from Jill. Patty, and she says, I propagate philodendrons with my, from D, excuse me. My orchid plants have fungus gnats. I have the sticky tape, which catches some of them, but there's still many more. Very careful not to water too much or leave the bark too moist. Any product I can use in the soil that won't harm my orchids but will kill the larva in the bark?
Well, I don't usually hear about fungus gnats in orchids, so My first recommendation is to stop watering your orchids.
Yeah.
Because, you know, orchids actually like to be in a humid environment, but they don't like to be wet. And fungus gnats will only survive if the organic matter in the pot is really, really wet. And so with any type of plant that is infested with fungus gnats, the first thing we recommend is to stop watering it. Because in a regular pot with the soil, with a soilless or a soil mix, the fungus gnats will lay their eggs in the top inch to 2 inches of soil. And so if you make sure that the plant is completely drying out, you know, that top 2 inches of soil is completely drying out between waterings, you shouldn't have fungus gnats. So, yes, the sticky yellow cards, those white fly traps, can be used to capture the adults. But until you take care of the moisture problem in the pot, you're going to continue to have those eggs hatching and the larvae feeding on that fir bark or the peat moss or whatever organic matter is in the pot. So you got to keep it dry. There is a product that can be used to kill the larvae, and it's an organic product called Natrol, G-N-A-T-R-O-L, and it's a Bacillus thuringiensis product, so it's an organic toxin that kills the larvae of insects. And this particular formulation that's in Natrol is used for that particular kind of insect. And you basically drench the pot with the Natrol, and it kills the larvae. But I have found that just letting the pots dry out really is enough to kill those larvae off. Yeah. So it's just, it's an indication that there's too much water. And orchids don't like so much water. So,
it's a little drier.
Yeah.
Keep it humid, but.
Yeah, keep it humid, but the plant will actually be happier if you water it less frequently.
Let's go to Lois in Lancaster next. Hi, Lois.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a geranium, which I brought in last fall. It was covered with blossoms, but before the night that it was freezing, I cut the blossoms off and took it down to our fruit cellar and left it in the pot in the dirt. And then probably around Christmas time or thereafter, it started to send out shoots.
Mm-hmm.
And they're long yellow shoots, and I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with the plant. I'd like to, you know, have it so it would blossom again next spring, but
and it will
this spring.
It will. But it's still alive. That's a good sign.
Yes. Yeah. Should I water it?
But you should bring it up from the basement. It needs some light, and you can't just start watering it while it's still in a dark area, or it will. You'll end up getting some root rot. So you need to bring it up. And you need to find a bright window for it, cut back those yellow shoots.
Should I come back? Okay.
And start watering it. And then in a couple of weeks, start giving it a dilute fertilizer.
All right. Okay.
To help support that growth. And then when the temperatures get a little bit warmer, you can move it outside.
I really don't have a place in the house that I can bring it up.
You don't have a window?
No. It's a huge plant.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Yes, I have that same problem. Well, if you can't find a bright enough window to put it in, you can risk it and leave it in the basement and keep it fairly dry. You might want to give it a little bit of water, but you really don't want to encourage that growth.
No.
Because the more of that etiolated, strung out, yellowy growth you get, the less chance you have of it really coming back nicely in the spring. And so I wish I could tell you that spring was really here and you could put it outside, but I had snow on the ground this morning. So
yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's not spring yet.
Well, next week, and at least for southern Wisconsin or good big parts of southern Wisconsin, I know in the Madison area, they're looking at 60 degrees all week. So,
wow, see, yeah, that's just so tempting. There are going to be a lot of plants that are going to croak from that. That's a little risky. The other possibility is if you have a light that you can put on it, you know, a bank of fluorescent lights. Is there some place where you can put it under a light? If you've got a fairly protected garage with a window in the garage, you know, you could try in the garage.
Yeah.
But depending on how cold it gets, you know, geraniums are pretty hot, tolerant of cold weather, though. They can handle some pretty chilly temperatures. But right now, light is the key thing. It wants light.
Mike in Cedarburg. It's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Okay, hi. Okay, hello.
Hi.
Hi. So, yeah, my question, I have a grapefruit tree that my mother planted from a commercial grapefruit seed from the grocery store about 28 years ago.
Okay.
It's about, it's in a large pot, and we move it in and outdoors every year with the refrigerator dolly.
Mm-hmm.
It's never flowered or anything like that. It gets real green. We use it as sort of an ornamental. I mean, we put the pears and the partridge in it at Christmas time.
That's a beautiful thing.
Is there anything that can be done to promote the flower? Is a grapefruit a male-female type plant? I'm just curious.
You know, when you grow citrus from seed, you just really don't know exactly what you're getting. And typically, you know, they can begin flowering when they get to about the age that your tree is. It usually takes 20 to 30 years for them to flower when they're grown from seed like that. But because it is a seed-grown plant and it's not a cultivar that was developed specifically for interior use, you know, it may never flower here because we don't have, you know, those Florida-like conditions that it probably is looking for to flower. Whereas the cultivars that are developed to be used as houseplants and that will grow and produce fruit up here are not as sensitive to that whole light quantity and quality type of thing. But, you know, it may surprise you and you may get flowers. And if you were listening earlier when I was describing the flowers, you need to look and see what kind of flowers you have on your tree. You should end up with both. You should end up with a perfect flower that has both male and female. But if it does begin to flower the first year, you may only get male flowers, because that's pretty typical, you know, to only get the male flowers. And so it will be missing that central stigmatic surface that will form the fruit. And so you're missing the female parts. But if you want to try and encourage the flowering and see whether or not this is your year for flowering, make sure that you are using a fertilizer on the plant that promotes flowering and doesn't promote just an enormous amount of vegetative growth.
That's higher phosphorus, is it?
Right. Well, and it needs to be a complete fertilizer, because in interior plants, when you're talking about a plant that's in a pot in a very controlled soil environment, a lot of the nutrients and elements in the soil get mined out pretty quickly, and you need to replace them. And so citrus benefits a lot from a slow-release fertilizer that's mixed into the soil mix, in addition to a complete fertilizer that contains such things as magnesium and calcium, not just nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
Yeah.
So you need a complete fertilizer. And, you know, there are a lot of people who think that some of the organic fertilizers, like the fish emulsions, work better with citrus because they do have a lot of those minerals in them. They have some extra things in them. In addition, you could be using something like Epsom salts, which is magnesium sulfate, in your watering solution to try and increase the amount of magnesium in the soil. But a tree that size in a pot, and I know it's a big pot because you're talking about it being an older tree in a big pot and using a refrigerator dolly, but even in a big pot, that tree is going to be using a lot of water and nutrients, and so it's really important that you maintain that and keep replenishing the soil with the nutrients that the plant needs. And then perhaps it'll flower, but let me know if it flowers.
Yeah, we'd love to hear. It's, boy, a 12-footer hauling that in and out all the time.
But, you know, grape, the seedling citrus can get to be 25 feet tall.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, if it gets that tall, we got about 20 feet for it. But that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Good luck, Mike.
If it flowers, I want to see some pictures.
Yeah. Also, it's real hot, so it's hopefully going to grow well.
But yeah. Well, be sure to post some photographs on our Facebook page if you ever get flowers. Right. Well, even without, I'd love to see what the thing looks like anyway. So take a picture. Send it to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to see what it looks like. Oh, man. Jim in McGregor, Iowa, has a comment or question. I'm sorry, a question. Hi.
Hello there. Great show, as usual.
Thank you.
I was interested in asking about if your guest might know anything or have a recommendation of a specific cultivar or a place to purchase a kaffir lime tree. We like Thai food and cooking with that, and the kaffir lime leaf is really an essential ingredient in the curries. And so they're difficult to find now, even in Madison. When we go to the Oriental stores, they actually suggested that we look to just purchase one. And so I wondered if you might have any information about that.
I have never grown that one personally, and I'm trying to think if I... It seems like I did see one in a local garden center last year, but I.
Ah.
But you know, I go to so many different places. I don't know where I would have seen it. You know, the only thing I can recommend is to ask around, and if your local nursery, your local garden center doesn't have it, ask to order it, because I know I've seen them online.
Yeah.
But it is one of those things that, you know, you'd kind of like to see it before you buy it to make sure
you're
getting a good plant.
But
if your local garden center or nursery has a grower that they work with on a regular basis, that you might want to check with them and see if they can track one down. It is a different type of plant, but I think it also appreciates a little bit higher humidity and definitely higher light. But I think it is... a little bit different in its cultural requirements. I think it requires a little warmer temperature. You know, the citrus can tolerate some lower temperatures.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that one. I would have to do a little bit of research on it to see. If you post, are you on Facebook?
Yes.
Okay. If you go, you can post it on Larry's Facebook page, or you can post it on my Facebook page. I'm under Patty Nagai, PattyNagai. You can post the question again on Facebook, and next week I'll try and do a little research for you and see what I can find. And maybe I'll remember where I saw that.
Okay.
But we can check around and see. There's some place we can purchase one of those.
Well, thank you. Could I ask about a possibility of a suggestion for key lime? For a key lime tree?
A key lime is a different little tree also. And key lime trees get, you know, they're fairly large. And I've never seen one sold as an interior plant. You know, where they grow is actually pretty restrictive. They only grow in the very southernmost portion of Florida. You know, that's the place that has them the most. And I've never actually seen one for sale. So that would be an interesting thing to research as well. Now, the key lime has a slightly different taste than the limes that we get in the grocery store, or the Bear's lime that I have in my house. But I'm pretty sure the tree is fairly large.
Huh.
So it may not be something that you would want as a houseplant.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And an email from Carolyn. I reused potting soil that had been outdoors last summer to pot my amaryllis bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
Some type of larva appeared that left shiny silver trails on the soil surface, like a snail, but it wasn't a snail. Any idea what that might be?
Well, I would have guessed a snail.
That's what I would have guessed, too. That's why I was laughing.
But, you know, the other thing that gets into soil mix outside all the time are just earthworms. And they can leave trails, too. So it might just be some small worms, red worms or earthworms that can get into that soil mix that can leave those kind of trails. Grubs don't leave trails because grubs typically don't move.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't expect grubs to be in there, although it could happen. I mean, beetles, there are a number of different ground-based beetles that could get into the soil. You know, the little darkling beetles, the ground beetles, might lay eggs in a bag of soil, which would result in the larvae. But my first guess, like you, would have been snails or just earthworms.
Yep, there we go.
Either way. Not a good thing. You've got something in there you really don't want. I really dislike it when I bring critters in the house of any kind.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jenny and DePere has a question for you, so let's go to her. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. My question, earlier this year I heard you talking about cutting back hibiscus plants.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because I brought the ones in from in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get it done, and I know you said February. Can I still do it now?
Oh, you can pretend it's February and go ahead and cut them back.
And how far?
It'll be back. You know, you can cut them back pretty severely. The general rule of thumb for most plants is to not cut them back more than one-third, because that can really stress them out. But with hibiscus, is it a standard form or a shrub form? Is it on a single trunk?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it has a lot of...
it has multiple branches, multiple trunks coming out like a shrub.
Yeah, but it's in a pot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With those, what I typically do is cut them back so that each of those branches is about 10 to 12 inches long. So I cut them back pretty severely. And once you cut them back, they will start to break bud and put out new branches, and so it becomes really important that you start fertilizing them to give them the extra nutrients that they need in order to produce really healthy branches. And when you make the cuts, look at the branches really carefully and determine where the buds are facing, because you want to avoid making cuts at buds that are facing in, because those are the buds that are going to break, and you're going to end up with a whole bunch of branches growing towards the center of the plant instead of out. You want to cut back to an outward-facing bud. So look at the buds and make sure that the bud that's just below the cut is going to break and grow out and up and not crossing towards the center of the plant.
Okay.
Do you understand what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying? Okay.
Yeah,
so it's just like pruning a tree. You know, you want to make sure that you make the cuts in the right places.
Yep.
But you can cut it back pretty severely, and it'll be okay.
Thanks for calling, Jenny. Appreciate it. Pat in East Troy, it is your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Larry and guest. I just tuned in, so I hope we haven't covered this already. I asked the person on the answering the phone if we could get some help on what I thought was a tuberous begonia, but since I spoke to her, I found out that it's an impatient for the sun. And I brought it in. It plainly says on the tag, enjoy it for one growing season, and I was trying to milk it for another one. But it has sent out shoots,
mm-hmm.
kind of wet and squishy, and some of them are 2 feet long. It is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. It has a whole bunch of little sprouty leaves on the end, and gradually each one turns black and dries up. Is there any hope for this thing, or should I just get it out?
Oh, my, that sounds so unattractive.
I think you should take a picture of this, too, and put it up on my Facebook page.
We should start a new set of photos for ugly plants.
Oh,
ugly
man.
Plants. Should I keep it or not? Well, it sounds much like the geranium issue, and it's not getting enough light. And, you know, when we bring outdoor plants inside, and they go dormant, that's fine. But when they start to grow again, they're really looking for warmth and full sun. And, well, even with the, well, you said it was a sun-loving impatience. So, you know, it's looking for sunlight. A lot of the plants that we grow single season, sometimes they truly are single season. That means as soon as they flower, technically they will start to die back. So they're just annuals. But a lot of the plants that we grow as annuals here in Wisconsin really aren't annuals. They would grow perennially in other places. So, you know, you may be experiencing something along those lines, or it could be that you had seeds that dropped and now the seeds are germinating and producing these lovely plants. If you want to try and grow it out again, you need to find a better place for it where it's getting a lot more light. It's definitely too soon to take it outside, so you can't take it out. If you can't find enough light for it, you could put some artificial lights above it, a bank of fluorescent lights or plant grow light, or and even incandescent lamps can help, although you can't put those too close to them because they get so hot. And then I would say prune it back, because as attractive as that sounds, I would say that it needs to be cut back, and make sure you're not overwatering it, because if it's wet and squishy, you know, that doesn't sound good either.
Not good either. No. Good luck, Pat.
Yeah.
And again, if you've got a digital camera, shoot a picture of it and put it up on my Facebook page.
We could get all sorts of interesting photos, I'm thinking. Let's see while people torture their plants over the winter in Wisconsin.
Oh, man. Patty, always a pleasure. You know, just quickly, can you give me, in 30 seconds or so, give us a list of houseplants that don't like going outside in the summer?
The plants that really prefer to stay where they are mostly the ficus. So if you have a weeping ficus or a ficus ali, just leave them where they are. They really like to stay where they are. The other things that like to stay where they are, things like the philodendrons and the pothos, although if you have those really huge selim philodendrons, you know, the really big monster leaves, the monsteras, if you have a nice shady place out in your yard, you might could get it out there without getting too much damage. Palms, unless you have a very protected, shady area, don't move palms out, because if they get direct sun, they will burn terribly. So it's just important to remember that the brightest place in your house is really darker than the shadiest place in your garden. And once plants acclimate to a certain light location in your house, they have to reacclimate when you move them outside, even when you think you're moving them to a really shady place.
Mm.
So be careful.
Patty, it's a great pleasure. Can't wait for our next time together. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Larry. It's always fun.
Patty Nagai, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County. Doesn't she do a great job? It was really a lot of fun talking with her. Got more citrus questions than, tell you what, there are going to be a lot of Bear's Lime and a lot of Eureka Lemons sold. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.